How many of us have ever felt like we were being tried? Has anyone ever not felt like you're being tried? I know I have had several times in my life where I was so mired in loneliness or in loss or in despair that I couldn't see a path around it. I was one of those kids in middle school that was picked on. Not really sure why. My last name sounded a little bit like Foghorn Leghorn. That could be part of it. I hung out with the kids who were quiet, who were bookish. Not the really smart kids in the honors classes, right? But those kids that kind of fell short of that. I was divorced 5 years ago in a kind of surprise presentation. And the 2016 election for me offered a bit of despair. I remember curling up in my room as the results were coming in, and this is as my divorce was happening. I was already dealing with loss, and I'm curled up on my bed, just shaking in fear for myself, for the queer friends and family, for anyone who's not white and male. There were things that I knew about coping with hard times before and in between those events in my life, but I have to say that each one of them gave me so much practice with those tools that I have found myself more and more resourced for every hard thing that happens. Good thing, right? MJ Abel offers us some of the things that come out of the hard experiences. She says loneliness can lead us towards self-reliance, confidence. Loss can bring us to compassion. Surprise can lead us to awakening, to paying attention. Betrayal to discernment. Scars to resilience. Disillusionment to depth. How does that happen? What is that process? I think it's not so much about what we know before and after a particular trial, but how and where we know it, where we are in our hearts and in our bodies as we go through these things. It's one thing to have an intellectual understanding of the trials of life, right? Before my divorce, I could say loss and betrayal pretty easily. And now every time those words come out of my mouth, I go, oh yeah, I remember that. And that was hard, and here's what I needed while it was happening, and here's what brought me through. What I needed was friends, was family, was accompaniment, was reflections from those people back at me, not of my grieving, torn apart self, but of my creative, artistic, able to find joy self that was still in there. What I needed was to practice those things again, was to find a way to paint, to write, to speak while crying, not instead of crying. It was those practices born out of that experience that taught me to feel them in my heart and move toward them the next time something happened. And it's led me toward compassion for others, for myself. It's led me to awakening, to paying more attention. It's led me to resilience, to both being a source, a resource for people, and for knowing where my resources are. Because both of those are resilience. What that means for me is so many things. personally, the things I just talked about, right? I know where to go for myself when something hard hits. And theologically, there's meaning there as well, right? Which I have to talk about because, you know, it's church. Theologically, my understanding, I have said this before, my understanding of what God is when I use the word God is that that energy, that thing that arises between us, right, as we're in relationship, as we're looking at each other, as we're talking to each other, as we're feeling with each other, that is what God is. That is what holy is. That is what sacred is. When my husband asked me for a divorce out of the blue, I went, oh my, where is God in that? Bye, right? There's nothing. There's no talking. There's no seeing. There's no being with. What I had to learn through being with friends, through sitting by myself, through the crying and the creating, was that God's still there. I haven't been dropped by the universe. I've been dropped by a person, one person. And all of you and all of everything out there is still there. What I've learned during my times of trial is that the only way out is through. I'm sure someone famous has said that before me. I usually give attribution. I don't know who. But the only way out is through. Immersing into the experience, dealing with what comes up as I do that immersing, is the only way I have found through.
Our second wisdom reading is from the 13th century Persian poet, Islamic scholar, and Sufi mystic, Jalal ad-Din Muhammad Rumi. It's called The Guest House, and this is a version translated by Coleman Banks. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. They may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
This framing feels really important to me. If we are to find our way through instead of simply out, we need this idea of allowing every experience to guide us. As Rumi says, be grateful for whoever comes. Each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Neither MJ Abel nor Rumi tell us we should enjoy everything that happens. They advise us to let them in, to let our experiences trigger the emotions they bring. Rumi even says to invite them in. That's easier to do, of course, when they're emotions that directly bring joy or peace, right? The things that feel good are really easy to let in. Although even that, I have learned, is not always as easy as it seems, especially for folks who deal with depression, anxiety, stress. Sometimes we are so unbalanced or things around us are so hard that we just can't. And even joy is inaccessible. we do not get to choose what happens to us, or often what happens around us. We can influence what happens around us, of course, through our own actions when we have the capacity for that. And that can go lots of different ways, only some of which are for our own or the greater good. We and our human siblings are capable of so much good, right? We can act out of such love, such care, such empathy, such intention to produce and to amplify life. Life. And we're capable of so much horror. We can act out of selfishness, hard-heartedness, closed-mindedness, each and every one of us. I presume, I can only speak for myself, has done things out of selfishness or hard-heartedness or closed-mindedness. I'm not just talking about them. And we can, and we do, hurt each other. On top of that, terrible things happen for no reason we can see. Natural disasters, sudden death, illness that devastates the bodies of people we love, or our own, global pandemics. I will never ever say that these things happen for a reason or that there is good in them in and of themselves. And they are each a visit to our guest house. The blessings in each visit to our guest house do not always feel good, nor are they immediate or even apparent sometimes. But we do get to choose how we respond to what happens to us, right? The thing I have told my child since she was this tall, you can't change so-and-so, you can only change you. It's trite. And it's not. We get to choose how we respond to what happens to us or what happens around us. And sometimes that works for us by offering us tools to help us move more easily through to the next thing. When we're faced with something that brings us loneliness or loss, surprise or betrayal, disillusionment, we can choose to block them out. We can go merrily along. We can compartmentalize them, as I learned to do in my 20s. We can insulate ourselves so we don't have to hurt, or at least hurt so much. Or we can choose to feel all the feels. Every time we choose to let the guest in, we become more practiced at it. Every time we open our hearts to joy, we create a more direct path for joy to enter. Every time we notice joy, we create a path for it to enter, simply by noticing it. And every time we open our hearts to pain, we widen the path for joy to follow when it does come. Have y'all seen the movie Inside Out? Right? The child has these five feelings inside her when she's small, right? Because they're easily definable into five feelings when you're small. And they're all little animated characters that look like kind of the feelings that they are portraying. So there's anger. There's joy and sadness. There's two others that someone will have to remind me of.
Fear.
Disgust. Right. They're not all good, as we think of them. And the movie kind of follows this story and centers on joy and sadness, on these two characters, as the little girl lives her life. And joy, this happy, sparkly, bubbly thing with beautiful blue hair and a cute little yellow dress. She's always trying to bring the joy, always trying to see the bright side in everything, right? Oh, we can make this happy. We can be joyful. And she keeps trying to put sadness into a little circle on the floor and say, stay there. Don't do anything. Please don't do anything, right? And of course, through the course of the movie, we learn as joy and sadness are cast out of the brain of the young child, out of the thinking brain, the conscious brain of the young child, and they meet her childhood pretend best friend, Bing Bong. And Bing Bong is super sad because the little girl doesn't need him anymore. He has been cast out into long-term memory, forgotten by the conscious mind, and he's fading away. And Joy keeps trying to cheer him up, right? Come on, it'll be okay. And finally, at one point, he just breaks down, and he's sitting down on the edge of a cliff, and sadness comes up next to him and puts her arm around him and just goes, yeah, I know. I know. And he feels better, even as he is moving towards his end. I wish I'd seen that movie when I was 12. So there's this time in our history. And it's hard sometimes to see the blessings in this time. So much. I can only share the ones I have gleaned and maybe talk a little bit about my thoughts on our collective blessings. For myself, these past 2 years of uncertainty and constant new information and constant change in how I believe I should behave to keep myself safe and healthy have forced me to learn how to move with uncertainty and fear. How to dance with them almost, as if they were my partners instead of things in the air around me that I have to live in spite of. Change is constant, and it's everywhere. And at no time in my life has that been more apparent than in these last 2 years. Like many of you, I spent the first year in hiding, keeping myself isolated to stay safe, limiting my interactions with people to phone calls and video chats and virtual happy hours that have to be planned. Every interaction was intentional. You'd think that someone who is all about intention would love this. And for a while I did, but what I found, the blessing from that, what I have found as I come out into the world now, as I visit coffee shops and stand in lines again at grocery stores and other places, fully masked, of course, but there, present, is these unplanned, random encounters. Virginia brought me an article, what, a year ago about this? How important it is, and how we are missing these chance encounters with people, how they fire a part of our brains, right, that are just being neglected. And as a really strong introvert, I kind of went, yeah, whatever. And now that I'm out, right, now that I'm moving through and not just going like this, I'm finding that. I'm learning it. That's a learning for me. I'm going out into the world. I'm finding this guest has brought me new understandings of what I need to thrive. I need that to thrive. It's prompted me to think about all that matters. About taking out my dog for experiences she enjoys. And taking out my kid. And not going, not now, honey, I'm working. And doing things on my own bucket list. And being given the space and time to feel that fear, that sadness, that rage that this virus and the human responses to it have offered the unnecessary, the preventable deaths, the inequity of who has access to medical care, my own sheer helplessness and stark realization of how little I actually control, that also has moved me into a place of more compassion for people who have it so much worse. People who have been living the fear that I have felt in these last 2 years, their whole lives, for decades, for centuries. It has strengthened my resolve to work to make this world fit for everyone, for all beings. For people who don't know how or don't have the resources to find any blessing in their lives, people who've lost loved ones, people who participate in systems of oppression, which is all of us, and even those who contribute to them knowingly out of their own selfishness or need to stay safe. So I turn to thinking collectively what we all need to thrive, right? I think this 2 years has offered us a lot of that as well. It's taught us to slow down. It's taught us to offer kindnesses. It's taught us to take care of ourselves, really, explicitly and intentionally, and our loved ones. It's taught us to change how or where we work to accommodate things we've learned are more important than producing stuff. It's taught us how to notice where there is beauty. And so I turn finally to the poet Mary Oliver, who encapsulated this entire ramble with these words. Someone I loved once gave me a box of darkness. It took me years to understand that this too was a gift. Because even my words, when we're at the point of despair, the sun rises, spring follows winter, flowers bloom, people create beauty, and we can learn to notice them and prioritize them and hold them. May it be so, and may we be so.